Hey guys, it's Lavetta.
And it's Miriam.
And this is a Notorious Women podcast, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women.
Some of these queens are heroic.
And some of these bitches are horrific. But we think the most interesting thing of all is that they're all
notorious.
Yes. Welcome back, listeners. Okay. Welcome back to our part two episode of Imelda Marcos.
I'm so excited.
Yes. We're going to jump right into it. But how have you been, my friend? How was your...
You know, the democracy around me is dying, but I'm fine.
Oh, my God.
I'm fine. We're fighting back. Yeah. We are fighting back. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean.
Nice try, bitch. That's what I have to say about that.
Dusty wig. Yeah. Well.
The Dollar Tree dictator. Someone said that the other day, and I'm there for that. I'm there for that.
Well, the thing is, for me, the problem with that is that don't underestimate how terrible he is and how he can make.
No, I don't do that.
Yeah. So even when we're calling him names, it's like he is causing real harm to our country and into people's lives. So, yeah, we'll see. But back to somebody else who caused real harm to people's lives.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about that. Every time I talk about Imelda, I sound like Petunia Pig, you know? Okay, let's talk about her. I mean, I don't mean to. That was not my plan, but that's what came out. I don't know why.
Oh, my God. Side note, on TikTok, somebody has been uploading Looney Tunes. Like,
oh, my God, really? I missed that.
So Bugs is so stupid, or Yosemite Sam. It's just so stupid. I love it, love it, love it. Yeah. But yeah, let's get right into it. But before we do that, listeners, if you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, go ahead and leave us a 5-star review. That helps people find us, and we would really, really appreciate it if you could do that for us.
Yes, please.
Because we're smart. We're pretty and
brain place.
Yes. Yeah. And
Listen, and if you're looking at our faces right now on YouTube, you can like and subscribe.
Absolutely.
You know, why not?
Yeah. And click that notification button so you will get notified when new episodes drop. So let's get into it. Part two of Imelda Marcos.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Let's go.
So now, like last week, remember we ended off where Ferdinand Marcos became the 10th president of the Philippines.
Yes, he did.
You know, just a little recap from humble, from actually not so humble beginnings to her family losing money to her being sort of like the poor relation that was tolerated to her going to college and joining beauty contests and graduating and meeting Ferdinand Marcos, who made the moves on her. He was like, he acted like he didn't really know who she was, but he totally knew who she was. And he made the moves on her and they got married. It was like an 11-day courtship and they got married very, very quickly. And they're off to the races about 10 years into their marriage. He ran for president and won. And mainly because of, remember we were saying last week that Imelda, because of her family's financial situation when she was a very young child, she sort of like presented herself as like coming from humble backgrounds, but she didn't really.
She basically like read the book on humble beginnings, you know?
And I mean, she did experience life as like having trouble paying her school dues, payments and that kind of thing. But because of that and her singing, and again, she's very beautiful and very elegant and very charismatic, she really appealed to the poor. So when Ferdinand was running his campaign, he ran on a populist platform. I'm here for the people. And right. So when she was on the campaign trail, she would wear the tarnos and she would sing traditional folk songs, and she was really leaning into the folksiness of it. So
yes,
it really
propaganda.
Yeah. So it really, really helped her. And Ferdinand himself even said that she delivered him at least 1 million votes. So again, on November 9th, 1965, Ferdinand Marcos was elected as the 10th president of the Philippines. He was inaugurated on December 30th, 1965, and Imelda officially became the first lady. Now, part two. So now the Romualdez clan, her people, her family had been torn apart by the presidential campaign. Basically, people took sides, some of them supporting Ferdinand and some of them not. Some supporting his opponent. But Imelda wanted everyone to come together after the election. So to fix this, she sent out invitations to family members for a private pre-inauguration event and told them that they were all welcome to their home. So they held, they even held a mass ceremony in the courtyard of their home before proceeding to the inauguration ceremonies. That night, a state dinner hosted 60 guests in the reception hall of the now, which would become the presidential palace. Now, during Ferdinand's first term, Imelda began doing the duties traditionally expected of a first lady, social events and public appearances, looking pretty, because remember, this is 1965, the heyday of the American Camelot, the Kennedys, Jackie O. And they were very much aware of that. And they, because they were a good looking couple, really fashioned themselves as the Filipino Kennedys.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. Kinda.
So, yeah. Now, again, she at first was like, oh, social events, public appearances, but it soon became clear that she was actually a power broker. So she would have receptions at her offices at the presidential palace in quote unquote the music room, where many cabinet members, head of financing institutions, and business leaders appeal to her. They would show up and bend the knee, to use a term from Game of Thrones, because they knew that she had Ferdinand's ear. And so they really wanted to flatter her. And it worked because everyone knew that Ferdinand really did lean on her and listen to her. And he supported this. He loved this. He loved this idea. So in fact, that following year in 1966, he established a cultural center of the Philippines through Executive Order Number 60 and arranged for Imelda to be elected chairman of the board in a bid to change the perception that she was just another politician's wife.
Okay.
So he really wanted to elevate her and not, because he, which is really very progressive, considering.
It's very progressive. It's very lovely. I just get triggered when you say the words executive order these days.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. In 10 years, maybe I won't shudder, but right now, there's a little shudder. Sorry.
Oh, my God. So now, in keeping with the campaign, when the people were like, and she's like, I'm just like you, folksy people. And, you know, the poor would gather and they would come in droves to see Marcos's beautiful wife. Imelda took that whole idea about the beauty to heart, especially.
Okay.
She had this thing that she would, over the next 2 decades, she would say that her thing was that she would say, quote, I'm a soldier for beauty. End quote. So to her, basically, she felt that if people saw beauty in her or in their surroundings, it would make their lives better.
You know, I thought the same thing when I was 5. I remember thinking, if the world could just plant flowers in the bad places, then everything would be fine. But then I turned 6 and learned some things.
Not 6.
So.
Well,
it's a rough life.
I don't disagree with her. I like beautiful surroundings like the next person. But you know what people need? Money and food.
They need money.
And food.
Yeah. It's not. Yeah. Uh-huh.
They need food.
They need shelter. They need a little extra to do a little extra. Okay.
Yeah. They need money. They need money to buy the things like shelter and clothes. And they need food to have the energy to buy the things with the money that they need. Yeah.
There you go.
So now in the first 3 years of being first lady, that's exactly what she focused on, making the Philippines beautiful. Because again, in their mind, they're like, we're like the Kennedys. So our surroundings have to reflect that. So it meant spending a lot of money, baby. So she spent about $2 million USD for the beautification of the Paco Park. And that's $2 million by today's standards. So $2 million.
Damn, that's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. And then
people could eat on that money. Go on.
And then she spent $48 million for the beautification of Fort Santiago.
Can we discuss how their schooling at that moment in time required money? Like she's making these pretty things, the flowers and trees and like walkways, but like children needed money to go to school, and without money, they don't go to school.
And she did, but I'll get into that a little bit more. So she did, because in May of 1966, she pushed a $24 million pool together for social welfare efforts on several dozen social welfare programs and groups. So the plan involved the construction of welfare villages and the reorientation of personnel to staff them. So the cornerstone of the first village, the Reception and Study Center in Quezon City, was laid in 1966, and several more were built up until 1968. There was a children's orphanage. There was the Home of the Aged. All of this stuff is great, right? But again, and I know the Philippines is a small country, but it's great to build these buildings. It's great to make things beautiful. But what people need, like you said, kids need to be able to go to school. So why not? Mm-hmm. Why not sign an executive order saying that school fees are either cut in half or completely gone?
Free.
Right. Right.
You have $48 million to make a park. You can send every child to school for free. I don't want to hear it.
I mean, again, these are where her values lie. Now, in the mid-1967, she started the Share for Progress, a seed dispersal program. See, and this is what I'm talking about. This is what we're getting down to. A project that suggested making vegetable gardens out of the idle lots all over the country. Yeah.
Okay.
By the end of 1968, over 300,000 kits containing seeds had been distributed in over 1,500 towns. Sounds great, right?
I think so.
It seems publicly it's like all of this is designed to help the poor. Her love, you know, again, that's what they ran on. Folksy, this is a populist platform. That's what they ran on. I would say that it was just not quite enough. And I know it takes time to, you know, to roll out these programs. But as much time as she spent on these programs, she spent on enjoying the finer things in life.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause in her mind, she's like, I'm helping the Filipino people see, because in the words of Victoria Ratliff from White Lotus, when we enjoy these things, it makes it better that other people are suffering.
I forgot her wisdom. But thank you for reminding us.
It so reminds me of this.
Exactly. Oh my God, that's like to a T. Oh, exactly. Yeah.
So Imelda's love of
it. Would be wrong of me to not enjoy it.
Right. And she.
Right. I don't want to be disrespectful.
It was just as important for people to be surrounded by beauty and also to see me being beautiful as it is for their lives to be better. So.
I could get on board. Can we start that? I'm going to start that.
God. That's fine if you're not a government official. Now,
there you go.
She enjoyed the finer things in life. It was only second to her desire for power. So now there's this group called the Blue Ladies. Initially, it was composed of the wives of political men in the Nacionalista Party. It had played a critical role during the 1965 campaign. They contributed funds and provided publicity, giving the campaign a personal touch by visiting factories and farms to shake hands and have small conversations with voters, like town halls, right?
Right.
And they would make door-to-door appeals in the slum areas. That year, they also introduced to politics the purchase of a radio and television time to campaign for the Marcoses. Propaganda machine.
Yeah.
So yep. through the use of the little village, the speeches for the voters, not necessarily. It could, you know, because I'm thinking of the chat, the fireside chats during the Great Depression.
Yeah.
With, you
yeah.
know, but, you know, there's some signs, there's some red flags. Now, the Blue Ladies were mostly prominent matrons and or beautiful young girls married to men of means. So imagine these people okay. showing up in your slum, in your neighborhood.
Right.
And again, you get to see them be beautiful and then, I guess, make your life feel better.
No. Sorry. Yes, go on.
So Imelda...
I cannot roll my eyes enough. Okay.
So Imelda asked members of the Blue Ladies to accompany her on the trips throughout the country. So basically continue what they had started doing during the campaign. And one of her most famous members of this and one of her most famous socialite friends was Christina Ford, the wife of Henry Ford II.
Oh, my. Okay.
Who had been born in Italy, wow. but had married very, very well. So
yes, she did.
Now, yeah. Imelda's Blue Lady, specifically a woman by the name of Maria Luisa, was the daughter of a rich madrigal family and wife of Daniel Vasquez, contributed to the fashion spending of Imelda.
Here we go.
Here we go. Now, in 1968, Maria accompanied Imelda on an overseas trip, during which time Imelda and her daughter, Amy, spent about $27 million in today's money.
What the and what? To do what?
Just
to get
traveling,
what?
Buying stuff. At this time, Maria and Vasquez, actually her friends, at the time, Maria and her daughter accompanied Imelda and her daughter. So at the time,
so it was like a mommy daughter situation.
Exactly.
On crack.
Maria
Got it. Okay.
would later recall that Imelda opened up a Citibank account. So this was abroad, okay. overseas. In November of 1968, the couple added Fernanda Vasquez as a joint holder of the bank account.
Why?
Now, her name is Maria Luisa.
Right.
She's married to Daniel Vasquez. So,
right.
Imelda opens up an account and then adds the name Fernanda Vasquez. It's a switcheroo. So basically,
I'm confused.
It was one of many bank accounts that would be opened under an alias.
Okay. So there is no Fernanda Vasquez.
No.
Got it.
Okay.
That makes sense.
So this is later on, but again, this is 1968. So we are 4 years into their first term, actually three
right.
years, and they're already spending money like water. So she spent $27 million on this trip, and she has spent like $2 million here in the country, $24 million. Okay. And on one project, but $2 million on another. But again, where is this $27 million coming from? So keep that in mind.
I don't know. Yeah.
Now, she was very much a woman who, she was very much into image. And I get it. It's the '60s. You're looking at the Americans who they maintain a close relationship with the Americans. And Ferdinand was vehemently anti-communist. Anti-communist.
Okay.
So that really, the Americans are like, yes. So they were fully supported by the American government. During this time. Now, again, she's all about image, because keep in mind, even among Asian communities, you have the East Asians and then you have what they call quote unquote jungle Asians, which is very, it's derogatory. What? Basically, Southeast Asia, which is Philippines is part of. So East Asia is China, Japan, Korea.
Okay.
And physically, they look different too. People in Southeast Asia tend to be darker, like that kind of thing, right?
What's funny is all American, when I was like in my 20s, all we wanted to do was travel through Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
Like all we wanted to do. Like
because
we did not, you know, because it's beautiful.
But remember, this is a 60s. So we are only about 20 years past the end of World War II. Also.
Yeah. That's
so,
true.
Yeah. So she was very aware of how the Philippines looked. And again, she wanted to, she and Ferdinand wanted the country to be seen as part of the developed world. So basically, okay, they were trying to keep up with the Europeans and the Americans. So, for instance, okay, on July 4th, 1966, she invited the Beatles to perform at a private event in the palace. But their invitation was declined. As a result of this, though, so they were extending these things. They were very generous and they seemed like lighthearted, but they did not like being told no. So as a result of this, they made an order to lock down Manila International Airport.
What the fuck?
And then mobs tried to storm the band's hotel room and prevent them from leaving the country. There were also reports that a fine in the form of a tax assessment was issued to their manager. So again, these are all warning signs of what's to come.
That's a red flag. Yeah. That's a lot of red flags, actually.
Now, while all this was going on, Ferdinand began becoming more hardened in his tactics and suppression of any dissent or criticism about the lack of change for the poor and how the government was being run. Again, it takes time. It's not overnight, but you guys are looking pretty, but the people are like, okay, when are we going to start to see something? Like, what's
like,
happening?
Nice shade of lipstick, but I'm hungry. Like, yeah, the fuck?
And this is when also reports of people being disappeared and tortured were starting to be whispered about. Now, side note, apparently when Ferdinand became president in 1965, his opposition had already warned that he was corrupt. They harped on the fact that he had been convicted of killing one of his father's political rivals in 1935, a man by the name of Julio Nalandazan. So he was convicted. The conviction was later overturned by a higher court, but some say because of his family's political influence and not because he didn't do it. So
holy shit. This is also very triggering, having someone running the country who's already been convicted of bad things.
And also, unlike what we're going through in the States now, he was also accused of fabricating his bravery during World War II. So, yeah. And also,
yeah, well,
again,
our president is 6'4" tall
and zero body fat. Yeah.
Yep.
And
well,
also
0.7.
Keep
Let's
in
not
mind,
exaggerate.
Though, like today, he did run on a populist campaign. I'm like you. I'm trying to make the Philippines great again. Da, 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 da. But this is a very, but Ferdinand comes from a very elite family, like political family.
Ferdinand's like,
yeah. So,
you're not like me.
But no matter what,
like me.
I know. But no matter what, Imelda always seemed to support her husband, even when the rumors of an extramarital affair, but in particular one from 1968, when Ferdinand met an American actress by the name of Dovey Leona Osborne.
Okay.
She came to Manila to play the female lead in a propaganda film portraying Ferdinand's supposed exploits during World War II. According to the actress, Dovey, the two had an affair and she was moved into one of his many safe houses where she recorded.
I'm just saying, I believe it. I believe it. This 100% happened.
Yeah, she recorded their sexual encounters with Ferdinand's full consent. These tapes were later played in a press conference, causing great humiliation for Imelda.
Why did he agree? These men who have all of this power get so stupid.
Yeah.
So stupid.
Yeah. Now, but don't cry for Imelda, because our girl,
I don't know, do that.
She's the queen of making lemonade from lemons. Okay, so according to members of the cabinet, Cesar Virata and Gerardo Sicot, they recount that Imelda used the humiliation of the affair as leverage to begin developing an independent political agenda, which gave her more and more political power.
Uh-huh.
Initially, this meant that Imelda had free rein on the projects, like the, you know, the beautification projects and that kind of thing, while her husband prepared for the next presidential campaign. But Ferdinand's health began to decline, and this would be sort of an ongoing thing. And then later on, they kind of figure out what it was. But again, remember, he's older than her, too. So,
oh, right.
it involved her being increasingly in more powerful positions. So she took a more leadership, and because before it was a little bit more on the sly and it was subtle, but
right.
after the whole like tawdry affair yeah. came out, all pretense kind of went away of like, she's like, I want power. So now, despite all of this and the lack of seeming improvement of people's lives on a, you know, on a meaningful level, despite all of this, the first term went well. She was a very successful first lady, as well as she okay. gained a lot of political power. It also meant in her new roles within the government that she had more control of more funding.
That's not good, because she has those pretend bank accounts, remember?
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay. I did not forget.
And she continued to do renovations, beautifications. She spent about $5.5 million in today's money on a renovation of all public and private infrastructure throughout Manila
okay.
and That's other good. Cities. She also started, because Ferdinand was having some, I think, medical things that he didn't really want people to kind of know. So he was trying to kind of hide it, but this is kind of like the start of it. So he pushed her out, and maybe a lot of people were like, yeah, he's trying to make up for like getting caught with his side chick too. Like,
yeah.
So he actually, she would go on his, in his place and to represent him even abroad to foreign visits into other countries. She basically became a de facto vice president is what she became.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
is there a vice president not doing anything?
No, remember that was the guy that she pretended to like beg the opponent, and then she like
him.
Yeah.
Yes,
so there's a vice
that's
president.
That's right. Okay.
Now, when they went to the United States in September of 1966, President Johnson, Lyndon B. Johnson, offered Imelda and the Philippines he offered them war damage claims totaling about $28 million.
That's nice.
And he agreed to have $3.5 million to be used as funds for the cultural center, one of her projects okay. specifically. So this is a gesture. Now, for the inauguration, the gala opening of one of these many projects, actually one that involved the prehistory of the Philippines, which was great, that occurred in 1969. And,
that's cool.
You know, so she was more on the world stage. That's why we know about her. Just like, again, like Jackie O, but unlike Jackie O, mm-hmm. she was actually making decisions in the Philippines.
Right. That's different.
Yeah. And she loved this. She loved hosting parties. She loved wheeling and dealing. When Nixon invited her, was invited by her to the Philippines. Instead, he actually sent future President Ronald Reagan, along with his wife, Nancy okay. Reagan, who was then the governor of California,
yeah,
go to the Philippines. They flew on Air Force One. There were accounts during this visit that the First Lady of the Philippines, Imelda Marcos, attempted to bring other celebrities by getting them tickets to ride on Air Force One, because she was cozy with Nixon, like, right? And she was very charming and very beautiful, and all men are men, especially during this time. Mm. But Nixon actually put the nix on that. He was like, I don't think so. The Reagans ended up coming anyway. And when they came, it was the start of the closeness that would develop between the Reagans and the Marcoses.
Yeah, that sounds.
Which would come in handy later for her. But she did this for everybody. She loved to be with the important people. She was definitely one of those people. Definitely an elitist. Now, the scandals at home and the lack of economic progress for most Filipino people kept putting a damper on this. Like, so on the world stage, it's like, oh, the Philippines are doing great. Look at their first lady and their president. They're coming up in the world. But the people in the Philippines, mm-hmm. actual people are like, what the hell? Right?
Yes.
In 1972, mm-hmm. the Constitutional Convention delegate for Leti, the first Leti's first district, a man by the name of Eduardo Quintero. He accused Imelda and 13 others of bribing some of the convention members to vote against provisions which would have prevented Ferdinand from retaining power beyond 2 4-year terms, which was part of their constitution. So
this is all so triggering. Go on.
Yep. In the stress following the accusations and media circus, Imelda said that she had suffered a miscarriage because of all the stress and all the
accusations. No, she didn't. I don't believe her at all. She's a liar. Hell no.
Later, it was revealed that it was a hoax to avoid the charges.
See? As I said.
And so, yeah, allegedly, we do not want to get sued. Now, in 1972, tourism minister Manuel Elizalde called each member of Manila's foreign press corps to a party. Imelda arrived at the party and it started allegedly. So, again, the pressure is building in the Philippines. What the hell? You guys have been in power for almost 10 years now. Why has nothing changed? What the hell is going on? So yeah. She arrived at this party apparently complaining about how democracy doesn't work and only the Americans could afford it. On that same day, martial law was announced.
Oh, shit.
Martial law was, according to Ferdinand, was to create, quote unquote, a new society with reformed institutions, no inequalities, corruption, or crime. Imelda called it martial law with a smile. Now, they're supposed to be anti-communist. This sounds very much like...
You know what communism is? It's essentially martial law.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now...
Wait, I will say, I'm going to shout out to the Democrat. Like, there's like a progressive line of thought right now that is like, shut it down. The military should take over. Just keep listening to what happens when the military takes over. We don't want that.
No.
We don't want that. We could vote later. We can get through this. We can write our memoirs about the shitty time in America. It's shitty. It's bad. Right? But like, you don't want that.
No.
Okay. Okay.
This is textbook how to become a tyrant. So martial law brought more hardships for the average citizen and all the pretense of a democracy fell away. During this time, Imelda orchestrated public events using national funds to bolster her and her husband's image. Again, still focused on image. These people are so dense. People need to eat. Give them something. She and I will say a side note. I feel like these projects, these construction projects were basically a distraction for the people to make them think that something is happening, something's 100%. Moving. And unfortunately, a lot of times it was due to people getting ready to visit. So they have to put on this show. It's kind of like whenever you get the Olympics, all this work goes into getting the Olympics.
Yep.
And then, you know, with the hopes of it bringing money and hopefully the money sticking around after the Olympics. But they would do this in a hurried manner. And in one of these particular, I can't, it's somewhere in my other notes where one of these construction sites crumbled because they were so fast.
What?
And there were people trapped under in the rubble. And instead of stopping and pulling the people out, they were instructed to continue working.
No.
Yeah.
It's a grave site.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the videos I watched, this guy was saying that his father was one of the workers who like just kept working and he never got over hearing the people's screams and pleas to help them.
Oh my God, that's horrific.
Imagine how scared you have to be of your bosses to do something like that.
Yeah. How terrified.
Yeah.
You're just going to be one of those bodies. You're not.
Yeah.
You know it.
Yeah. So again, she's all about image, about building these things. So she had secured the Miss Universe pageant in 1974 in Manila, and it required the construction of the Folks Arts Theater in less than 3 months. Yep. She did, again, she would throw people a bone occasionally, initiated social programs such as the Green Revolution, which was intended to address hunger by encouraging people to plant produce in household gardens and create a national family planning program. Again, they need
food. I love that for them, but like, how many jobs are they also working?
How many jobs are they also working?
What is their day-to-day life?
Yes. This is why, like, you know, I think we don't really talk about the New Deal enough, like how, what a genius plan it was.
Yeah.
That it's like, oh, instead of just sending people checks, because if you don't really, if you aren't sophisticated, you think, oh, $1,100 check is going to help me. No, $1,100 check is not going to help you. What's going to help you is if you get a job working on government projects to fix roads and build government buildings, and that will give you income that you can spend on food for years.
Yes.
This is what
people try to poo-poo it. I think conservatives try to poo-poo
it. Yeah, because they're like, it's a handout.
We pulled out of the Depression because of World War II.
Yeah.
No, y'all.
No.
The New Deal was working.
It was working.
It was working. It was working really, really well.
Yeah.
Don't let that fool you. And yes, a war will create more jobs, but that's not worthwhile.
No.
Let's not have war.
No,
we don't like that.
Let's not have war for that. So
let's... You know,
so that's what she was. Right. So that's what they were doing. So again, it so reminds me. So this is in the 70s, and the 70s were tough for most countries around the world. And basically, it's sort of like trickle down economics. Like, we're really doing well, but it's like you're not
still don't work.
So the people are getting pissed. And so pissed that in 1972, an assassination attempt against her occurred on air, on live television.
Oh, my God.
A man by the name of Carlito Dema Healy, with a bolo knife, attacked her. He was shot by police, but later, and he was subdued by people. People say that the motive appeared to have been her, you know, basically the lack of movement socially for the people. But many people believe that it was staged by the government to garner them empathy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
But and if it were real, the Marcoses didn't heed the warning signs, because in 1975, Ferdinand issued the presidential decree 824 establishing the Metro Manila Commission, the central government of Metro Manila, and named Imelda governor. He also appointed her the position of Minister of Human Settlements. She became more and more powerful. Both of them, actually. And this eventually led, because obviously there's opposition. There's always people fighting back. Never believe people aren't fighting back. People are always fighting back. And one of the main opponents and the person fighting back was a man by the name of Benigno Aquino Jr.
Okay.
And he eventually was exiled. He left the country because at first they didn't want to let him leave the country. And then I think Imelda, she kind of intervened, and then she was like, well, let him go to the United States. And once he was there, he was like, I'm not going back because I know what they got planned for me. So
yeah, he's probably right.
And also there was ever increasing periods, because now we're in the 70s and we're into martial law, and we're into his third term when he should only have two terms.
Yep.
So ever-increasing reports of disappearances of dissidents there are reports of people disappearing and being tortured, including one young college student, a young woman by the name of Liliosa Hill. She was a journalism student and young activist who many say was tortured. She was kidnapped, tortured, raped, and killed by Marcos's cronies in 1973. When they did find her, she surfaced in the hospital, and people's reports of them going, and they said she looked like she had been like disfigured. She was lying in the hallway. No one was attending to her. It was just terrible. Go and look that up. Terrible. Young woman. Now, eventually, because again, they were supposed to be a democracy. United States love with them. They're supposed to be, you know, but that martial law does not look good. And then mm-hmm. the ever increasing pressure within the country. But I also think that Ferdinand only, he lifted martial law in 1981, but only to run for president a fourth term.
Oh my God, Ferdinand, stop it.
But it was very yeah. apparent that he was very ill. And it turns out it was from lupus.
Oh,
so okay. effectively, and he won, big surprise there, effectively, Imelda effectively ruled the Philippines from that point. Like all pretense were off.
It's gone.
And all yeah. this time, while the people are suffering, people being reportedly disappeared, she continued to live very lavishly. Now, in 1986, going for his fifth term, the Jesus. People had had a fucking enough. So there were some snap elections that were held between Ferdinand and a man by the name of Corazon Aquino. The willow, Corazon Aquino, the widow of Benigno Aquino Jr., because when he returned back to the Philippines, he was shot at the airport. Yeah. I'm rushing through a lot because honestly, this could be a 10-part thing.
Yeah, like, it's, this is a lot.
This is a lot. So he claimed victory despite allegations of vote rigging. No surprise there. He brushed it off. And there were massive protests. Like people were fucking pissed. They were like, you got to fucking go. So, but he was just like, basically they did the let them eat cake kind of thing attitude. So they even held an inauguration a few weeks later after this fifth elected term, according to him. And they basically held it within a small circle within the palace walls.
Yeah.
The people were out on the outside, but people were trying to break down through the palace walls. Like people were fucking pissed. And they had been having massive, massive protests. They were getting violent. They were like, we're not backing down because this motherfucker's been here for over 20 years.
Mm.
20 years
yeah,
at this point.
Yeah, it's time to go.
So they couldn't ignore it any longer because the people were literally breaking through the gates and the walls. So he's like, all right, all right, all right, all right. I'm going to leave. But what I'm going to need you to do is to give a safe travel, me and my family, to Hawaii. So they fled quickly in 1986 with an 80 plus person entourage.
Jesus.
So the people went into the presidential palace, which they normal people hadn't been in basically in 20 years. And that's when they found the evidence of the extravagance that we know so well. You guys can all look it up, including her 3,000 pairs of shoes, 800 designer handbags, gowns. Now, keep in mind, that's the stuff that they left behind.
Yeah.
So imagine what they took with them if they left behind 3,000 pairs of shoes.
Yeah.
But the real notorious stuff of Imelda Marcos was revealed in the aftermath of when they fled and they were ousted. Along with their eight associates, they were actually indicted on federal grand jury charges in Manhattan on charges of racketeering, conspiracy, fraud, and obstruction of justice. She pleaded not guilty to federal charges that she used $103 million in stolen government funds to buy Manhattan real estate and art.
She denied it.
She denied it. She said, I'm not guilty. Cute. Tobacco heiress Doris Duke posted her $5 million bail. And during this time, Ferdinand died. So they get out in 1986. He dies on September 28th, 1989, which meant that it was Imelda who had to answer for everything on her own. Which
fair.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of fucked up because they definitely did all this shit together. But, you know.
I know, but like she made that fucking bed. I don't give a shit. She's full of it. No, indict her. Put her in jail. Jail, but, I say.
Listen.
Yeah.
Fear not, because in July of 1990, following a 3-month trial, I'm skipping a whole lot. There's so much to this. She was acquitted of all charges, but many people believe she was acquitted of racketeering in this one federal cases. There's many, many more cases that they were being brought up on. But ultimately, people believe today that the Marcoses stole between $8 and $10 billion
What?
From the government of the Philippines.
Holy shit.
And hid them in numerous offshore accounts.
Damn.
Now, after this acquittal and that 3-month trial, she successfully characterized herself as, quote, a poor widow who knew nothing about her husband's activities.
Oh, my God, Imelda.
Yeah.
I can't.
But not so fast, because like I said, there's many, 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 many more trials. In 1990, the Federal Supreme Court of Switzerland ruled that the funds in their Swiss bank accounts were of criminal provenance. So this cleared the way for the transfer of those assets, around $356 million, back to the Philippines.
Okay.
So at least they were able to get something back. To this date, I won't, spoiler alert, the Philippines has only been able to get about $3.5 billion back. So not nearly.
Not close.
No.
Y'all.
Now in February.
$1 billion is a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
Now, and that's like seven.
And this is a very small country too. Very small country. Now in February of 1995, the United States District Court of Hawaii ruled that the Marcoses needed to pay $1.96 billion to over 9,500 victims of human rights violations. Remember, I was telling you of the young woman, many, many more. So they brought a class action lawsuit against them. This decision was upheld by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in 1996, but the ruling has yet to be enforced due to jurisdiction issues in the Philippines. Now, in 91, when she and her kids returned back to the Philippines, they were accepted back. 28 criminal cases were filed against them by the Philippine Office of the Ombudsman from 91 to 95. This it included malfeasance of public funds and cases of graft, all kinds of stuff. So they were going through court cases. But Imelda's charisma never went away. There are so, like I said, there's so many court cases. I didn't even tip that. It's just the tip of the iceberg, not even the tip of the iceberg. Some of them she was acquitted from, owing to her influence and still people who were still loyal to them. And some she was convicted. But she and the Marcoses' name remain very powerful in the Philippines, even in the country today, because her daughter, Emmy, became a governor, a member of Congress, and a senator.
Oh my God.
Her son, Bongbong, became president in 2022.
What? Excuse me? What?
Yes.
Oh, my God. So she fully succeeded.
She fully succeeded.
She did not fail.
Today, the 95-year-old Imelda Marcos is still kicking about. Last year, she had a health scare and was briefly hospitalized. But this past year, she reportedly called President Dump last year after the elections to congratulate him.
She loves him.
So there's that.
She's probably super big fan.
And I will say that Bongbong, now the president of Philippines, says that his mother is the best politician that he has ever seen in his life. Way
That's
better
not
than his dad.
Necessarily a compliment.
Well, there's that. So now, of course, her life is so fascinating. And I cannot tell you, listeners, this could have been a 10-part series, because Imelda Marcos is infinitely fascinating, infinitely notorious. And there is so much to there's all these documentaries, older, newer. But recently there was a Broadway play, a musical called Here Lies Love from David Byrne and Fatboy Slim that chronicles the life of Imelda Marcos. And recently there is a limited series in the works called Chasing Imelda. That's because, again, she's infinitely fascinating.
Yeah,
infinitely notorious. There was so much stuff. There's so much side stuff. There's so much. She's notorious. She's a terrible person. I'm just going to call it.
She's really not a good human.
She's not. And the amount of. No one thinks that they're a bad person, but her whole thing is like, I'm bringing them beauty. When I was doing this research, it totally made me think of White Lotus. It would be insulting for us not to enjoy this wealth, even though they suffered. And you know what's so crazy about this, Miriam?
What's sage advice? Yeah.
If they had just helped their people
Yeah.
get a, like improve their lives a little bit better. Like I said, health, free education.
Yeah. Free education with the 8 to 10 billion that they stole from their people, steal 3 to 5 billion and then use the other billions. Okay. For a free education program. It's not a huge country. You can totally do that.
Greed has no bounds. I mean, if you had done free education for like through high school and then, like I said, done a, like instead of building like these things to beautify a park, build the roads, build. That's what we learned.
A fucking road and a stoplight. Yeah. Beautify that.
And employ your people.
Beautify a stop sign.
Yeah, but it's like that takes real commitment, but it's the greed. Like you said, if they had stolen one third of that, people may not have like
cared. They'd have been like, all right, keep going.
But you then know? You know you're doing wrong, and then you have to and then human rights violation. But listen, we cannot be on high horses as Americans because we about to see some of this shit the attempt to do some of this shit happen in our own country, and that no one is above being terrible people. I think
that's an important note. I feel like if we had done this episode 3 years ago, we would be like, wow, that's crazy. And we wouldn't think this would be this prevalent now. But if you think about it, and this is totally a side note, our history in America is not so great. We're not.
But
so
also,
nice.
This is what Putin, if you listen to people who actually know what they're talking about and foreign diplomats and foreign service, they say this is what Putin wanted. He wanted to show the world that America is not better than the Russia, that they're just as capable of being corrupt and not working for the people. And I would say that he's not wrong. Black people know that he's not wrong.
Yeah.
It's unfortunately a lot of our citizens are under illusion that it can't happen, and they only care when it starts happening to them.
What's crazy to me is that it has been happening since the creation of this country. So of course it can happen. You know what I mean? Yep. But we're so nearsighted.
So that's
that we
why
don't realize it.
Instead of saying, oh, I'm not going to vote. Politics don't matter to me. I'm not going to vote for the one that's not perfect. I'm just going to sit home and make, because, and also the thing about this is my whole thing with Trump. Trump is obviously a fucking idiot. He's a fucking idiot. He's stupid Reagan. Yeah. Stupid Reagan. The man can't read. I'm telling you, I don't think Trump can read above fifth grade level. The man is so dumb. That's why I don't understand why they fell for it. I understand why they fell for Reagan. I understand why they fell for the Marcuses, because at least they did look good and they could speak.
Yeah,
they could speak good.
Yeah.
But the Trump
thing, it's something in the water, man.
No, I know
I
what it
know.
Is. It's the racism. You hate the people that I hate. You're gonna give it to them. But it's like we've been telling you guys, it doesn't. He's not just gonna give it to us. He's gonna give it to everybody.
It's time to Okay, this is what I think. We need to bring back Rodgers and Hammerstein's and make new films of these beautiful movies. They all have the same. Like all these people, like they have the same point. Racism is stupid.
This is
creedism is stupid.
Who just
fucks you up?
Who just canceled Elmo? Who just canceled
he'll cancel Elmo.
Yeah. On that note,
like
guys, this is a cautionary tale, but it's been going on all
You've
over the
got
world.
To be taught.
And also in the United States too, like throughout the states, like we covered Boss Tweed's wife, one of the most corrupt people ever in the history of America. And I am hoping that Trump gets his comeuppance like Boss Tweed. But,
I'm really excited
in the meantime,
about the future of that.
I hope they make a movie about Imelda Marcos because she is infinitely fascinating. Like, and terrible. Let's be clear. She's a terrible person. terrible, terrible person. At least her deeds were. So don't come after us. But on that note, guys, that wraps it up for the latest episode of the Notorious Women Podcast. Remember to follow us on all the things. Remember also to like and subscribe. If you're listening to us on YouTube, hit that notification button as well so you can get notifications when a new episode drops. But please leave us a 5-star review in the Apple Store and on Spotify. That helps people find us. And again, like we always say, Don't just tell people about the podcast. Copy the link and send it to them and say, click on this. We think you'll like it. You can also become a patron at patreon.com/notoriouswomen if you want to help us out with some little money. And Miriam, how else can they find and support the show?
Y'all, we do social media. You know we do. Notorious Women Podcast is our TikTok. It is our Instagram. Easy peasy. You can also email us at notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. And that is that.
Yay, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. And next week, we're going to have a interview, a wonderful interview.
Yes.
And then we will take a week off and then we're going to start a new arc. So stay tuned. But again, listen to this podcast, listen to this episode, go back and listen to all the other episodes and tell your friends and family and loved ones about us. And we will see you next time, guys. Bye-bye.
That's right. Bye.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.